Have you noticed that politicians struggle to enact the things they run on? That regardless of who wins elections, lawmakers cannot pass whatever legislation they like. They find themselves bound by what is popular, or at least their sense of it. They can only act within a narrow set of ideas, and that range is called the Overton Window. And on the Overton Window podcast, we look at issues around the country and talk to the people who change what is politically possible. Now, you're not going to convince anyone if you're not in front of them first. And our guest today has been in front of people for his entire career, first as a TV broadcaster, then on social media and on Substack. Of course, he's my colleague. All right, he's bringing his talents and skills to us in the free market think tank world. He's my colleague, Dave Bondi. Dave, welcome.
Well, it's great to be here. I love being here at the Mackinac Center, learning a lot from you and all the other policy experts here.
All right. What do you think you're trying to pull around here?
I'm trying to educate and teach people about policy and things that I didn't know as a journalist. There's so much about economics and energy policy that as a reporter, I wasn't aware of as much as I should have. So I'm trying to just get the word out through my social media platforms, but also helping boost Mackinac, what you're saying, Jason Hayes, anyone else. Just trying to get the word out there because there's a lot of information that the public's not getting from, I guess you would call them, legacy media.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the legacy media for a little bit. Why was TV attractive to you?
Goes back when I was 6, 7 years old. I was living in the Detroit area. They had a famous anchorman, Bill Bonds.
Of course.
Very disruptive guy, said what he felt. But I liked the reporters being out on the scenes of stories and just out there investigating and going to City Hall and digging up information. So even as young as 7 years old, I would go around the neighborhood with a little fake microphone and interview neighbors. And I followed that path through high school, worked at a high school newspaper, college when Eastern Michigan wrote the newspaper there. Also worked at the Detroit Free Press during college in their high school sports department. So it just progressed. And I really wanted to do sports, but that transitioned more so to news.
Why did it transition to news?
Well, not a lot of jobs available in sports. It's really tough.
Really?
Do that?
Like, sports is the thing that's keeping broadcast media alive.
It's tough to get in, though. Okay. If you think about it, in every city, say TV stations, they have maybe three sports anchors, but they have a dozen or so reporters.
Gotcha.
So it was just tougher. And I wasn't as knowledgeable on all the sports. I knew nothing about golf, but I knew a lot about news and had interest in different areas. And I really like breaking news. I like being out on the scene of something happening and just letting people know what was going on.
All right. So this is something that, like, you wanted to do, you established yourself doing, but you've said that, like, something dissuaded you about the news industry.
It within the last 8 or 9 years, when I started working, I remember my first job, Wilmington, North Carolina. I was 22 years old, and the boss said, "Your job is to hold the powerful accountable." That's literally what my job is, to find information, to break stories, to dig into budgets, go to city council meetings. And I did that for the first 12 or 13 years that I was working. My first job was 1998, making $18,000 a year, and my dad thought I was a little out there because of paying for college and then doing that, but it paid off. But it changed over time to not holding officials accountable, more of like a PR in a way. I remember a story, if I can tell it, when I was working in Flint, Michigan. I tried challenging an elected official, and my boss pulled me into the office. They got mad at me. They said, "We might lose access if you're tough on that elected official." And then things were a little different. That's not how it was when I was early on in journalism. It had changed.
Yeah, I mean, I think journalists still feel like they have the important watchdog role, that they want to hold people accountable. But it seems to be kind of rare because you have to hold people accountable to something, which means that you have to have some type of principles. And news stations aren't about principles. They're about getting readers and listeners and selling ad space.
Yeah, and I get that. And there are many great journalists still out there, local, national, but less are going into it as well. I was a hiring manager at my last television station in Flint, Michigan. It was difficult to find reporters even. They're not going into it as much. But yeah, there's a lot of pressure with corporate as well. and the whole format. I remember a manager telling me, a news director, you can only tell a story in a minute 30. You cannot go over that. People's attention span is so low. But then when the likes of Joe Rogan started getting popular, the consultants, the news managers were perplexed. Why are people listening for hours? So I think that's part of the whole idea right there, that the news media didn't adjust maybe to what the viewers really wanted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, stories you can tell in a lot of different ways. You can tell a story in 5 seconds. You can tell a story in an hour. I guess minute and 30 is pretty easy. I'm hoping that a half hour is the sweet spot, though.
It is. And there shouldn't, and I worked for one manager that didn't have gotten, if a story is great, let it breathe. Mm-hmm. Let it go for 7 minutes. But I remember working in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania at the NBC affiliate. Every story had to be like a minute 15. Their A block, the first 5-8 minutes of a newscast, they had to have 30 stories in it. So it was different. And now I'm able to tell more, go in depth.
Yeah.
And that's what I think people are gravitating towards with Substack, independent journalist, even policy, like the Mackinac Center.
Yeah. Well, you've got quite a presence on social media. You've got a lot of people following you on Twitter. Why do they care what you have to say?
I gained those people through as I was working in broadcast. Mm-hmm. And I think I try not to give my opinion. I do a little bit more now that I'm not in the legacy media, but I will never, ever back any candidates for any office. Mm-hmm. And that I will be critical of, you know, Democrats, Republicans, independents. And I try just to give the information and not tell people how to think. But also on social media, it's a two-way street. A lot of businesses, a lot of journalists don't talk back to their viewers or their listeners. I think that's what helps me grow, because I take a lot of time interacting with the followers.
So that's interesting, too, because I do a little bit of tweets, and I do try and interact as much as I can. But there are some people who are just shouting at you, and that's what Twitter is famous for. It's let's shout at strangers. So how do you use Twitter, and do you shout back?
No, I try to educate them, or for example, you know, here at the Mackinac Center, we're on every social media platform. You can follow us, whether it be Mackinac or my own. I'll try to lay out information. This is why I'm saying this. And then if they just get out of control, as they call the trolls, I'll just ignore them and block them if they get abusive or just, you know, totally wrong. But there have been people, especially that I have had on my social media that have opened up to different ideas. For example, energy policy. Many of the people had no idea about certain things and that I opened their eyes to it. So there's lots of people that are learning more. The trolls, they will help with engagement, but I don't want that type of engagement. I ignore them.
Sure. Let's talk about the Overton window. Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of where you think your work has helped push the Overton window?
I think in general, not a specific story or what I've done. I think it's more towards independent journalism, independent content, and shaping the whole fact as to where are people getting their news. There is 3 or 4 people that before I took the leap and left the legacy media, I had followed, and they had done the same thing. Successful reporter in Seattle, Washington, doing very well. She walked away from it. There's Matt Taibbi and a lot of these other journalists that work for, you know, Washington Post and all these places, and they left. So I think I am part of the change of where people are consuming their information. So I myself, any stories I have done, I don't think has really changed the Overton window, but it's where the communication, where people are getting their information from, is drastically changed.
Yeah.
And I think we've learned that in the last election, possibly. It is a wake-up call.
Well, I want to chew on that for a second, because I agree. Like, everyone knows there has been this monumental shift. The mainstream media was able to, like, craft the appropriate way of thinking about issues. It wasn't necessarily monolithic, but you know, when you have only a handful of TV stations and everyone watching the national news, everyone getting kind of the local paper, like our imaginations wind up, or the things that form our sentiments, because people don't people have other ideas in their head than just what they read in the newspaper, they see on TV.
Yeah.
But that's, the internet has helped fragment that, which means that people are getting their information and access elsewhere, but they're also seeking it out because what they were interested in is either not being produced by the media or they're looking for something else. So what do you think?
And there are some negatives with that, with algorithms, Facebook, yeah. Twitter, TikTok. A lot of us are in our own little box. And that's what I do not like. There's been several people who have said, we're all journalists now. I don't agree with that because as a journalist, there are still ethics, there's morals, there's certain rules. You can't go out and slander or defame someone. I don't think anyone with a camera is a journalist.
Yeah.
But also with social media, the platforms want you to stay on it as long as you can, and they know who you are. So on X or Facebook, you're seeing probably points that you believe in. And that's somewhat of a thing that I try to challenge. I will put out on social different points of view, and some people get upset at times. So that's where I think there's a problem with social media. It's not giving someone a broad base of knowledge. It's focusing in on their little window.
Well, that's something that I've learned from a lot of our friends at sister think tanks who work in communications. Like, the owned audience is the most important thing.
Yes.
No one can keep you away from people when you've got their email address and they want to get what you're sending them. But if you have to rely upon social media, they can change that tomorrow if they want. They could decide that you're not going to abide by, or that you're not abiding by whatever rules or standards, mm-hmm. or producing the kind of content that they want to use. So, like, it's been a powerful thing, but you still have to try to own your audience.
You do, and that wasn't a thing a couple of years ago, but even myself, I am on Substack, which is an email list for people who don't know. Mm-hmm. A lot of famous, you know, journalists, Matt Taibbi, many of them are. Are you on, you're not on there, are you? Jason Hayes is?
I follow people on Substack.
Okay, but it's an email that goes to you. For example, on Facebook, I posted a story from Michigan Capital Confidential. I forget what it was about, subsidies. And I got a strike on my Facebook page saying it was false information. It turned out I got it reversed. But with those platforms, they own the audience. Yeah. They're not your audience. So that's why, and I suggest this to other content creators or even businesses, don't rely solely on the social media. Try to own your audience. Mm-hmm. Which I know Mac and I, we have an amazing newsletter list here, but I'm doing it and others. That's a big deal.
All right. So one of the themes that I've followed from your social media, I want to ask you about. What's the deal with keeping it real?
It started just as a thing when I was anchoring the news and reporting, and I would talk, I just keep it real. My dad was someone who was always...
Like, this realness, the media thing is like, it's kind of just, an inauthentic thing. You just try to be yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have a big example. When I was a reporter in the street reporting on a house fire or whatever it might be, I was myself. I was always just reporting and talking and pointing. But when I became a news anchor, I was in a studio, a sterile environment like this. And I wasn't me. I was a news anchor man. And a good friend of mine, a mentor who was an executive at NBC, and he still is, he said, be you. I didn't know what that meant. And then I'm myself. Realness. And it's really tough. You think it'd be easy to be you? But I did that about 8 years ago when I came to Flint, Michigan as a main anchor. I became me. And I think that helped. And then I just kept that being real.
Yeah. I was told that the character is who you are when no one else is looking. And that's kind of tough to maintain that character when you know that everyone is looking or you're trying to get in front of a lot more people.
True. I've, for example, several politicians, I've interviewed many of them across both the aisles, and some, you know, you see them on TV and then I meet them in person. I'm like, that's a completely different person. But there's others, and I may not know what they're really like,
yeah,
but they're like, some are like they are. And I think people see through the authentic part of it. And I know in the last election cycle, like former President Trump went on Joe Rogan for 3 hours. It's hard not to be you when you're in a room for 3 hours with somebody. So yeah, the realness of just being me, and some may not like it at times, but I try to be very fair.
I can see how that plays off pretty well on social media too, which is like they're coming to you for a particular thing. Your news judgment, your kind of a way of looking at the news, the things that you think are interesting and important.
And also it's real as if I don't put a lot with my family out there on social media, but I will do random things. Like yesterday, I know you're not supposed to use your phone when you're at a red light, but I was at a red light, took a picture of a billboard, and I just tweeted out or posted out. I guess it's not a tweet anymore. And I said, how refreshing it is to not see political billboards anymore. And it went wild on social media. I think just average things. And I think it resonates with people. And I think more journalists and people are doing that. You're seeing less anchors with ties on now.
All right. So you've been my colleague for a fair bit. Was it what you expected, this free market think tank world?
I didn't know what to expect. Yes. I was intimidated, still am a little bit. Yourself, amazing wealth of knowledge here with everyone.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I know I came in wanting to help spread your message to not just people who already know about the Mackinac Center, but people who don't.
Yeah.
I learned so much about being here. I've been here about a year and a half now. My first 6 months, I can admit this, were a little tough because in the world of TV news, it's very cutthroat. It's very the ratings day to day. So it was very nice being here. Some of the nicest people I've ever worked with in my life. Very calm atmosphere. I didn't have 2 hours to put together a story. I could do it in 2-3 days to make it look really good. But I've learned so much. And I first, going back a little bit, I learned about the Mackinac Center during COVID. It was a FOIA issue. I interviewed Steve DeLee for a television story. And that's when I learned more about what the Mackinac Center is all about. And very interesting, and that's what got me interested in. And now I'm just very happy to be here because I'm kind of doing the same job I did, but just in a different format.
Yeah, well, but and with kind of different incentives because, I mean...
No ratings.
Well, I assume that the ratings do tell you something. They like you're accountable to them. You've got to try and figure out what you can control and what you can't, yeah. Which teaches you lessons about what people might be interested in. Mm-hmm. That matters a lot, but we don't live and die by ratings, but we do need to get in front of people. Like we need to get the message out. We need to tell people something that resonates with them, to give them something that they want in a way that's going to help push policy reforms in the future.
And that's what I think I also bring because I know I was also a news anchor, but also the social media manager at my station. Mm-hmm. And I know the secrets and the algorithm tricks and to try to get things across. For example, the 1 minute short videos do great now, and that helps get out our message. And a year from now, they may not.
By the way, that is so tough for policy wonks.
Oh.
We want to talk in pages, if not studies. Getting it down to 1 minute is often a challenge.
And you've been doing a great job, Jason, as well, and others here, Jared, some of my colleagues you may know as yep. well if you've seen the Overton Window. And that's what I like working with them as well. Josh, one of our energy policy experts,
He's
very well. Some of his views are getting 30, 40,000 views, and it's outside of the box. And that's why I love Mackinac. Joe Lehman as well, you're willing to adjust and try different things. Right. It's not just... You know, in television news, sometimes just do as you're told and stick to the plan. But I love Mackinac because you're willing to do different things.
All right. So you follow me on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
What's some advice that you can give me so that I can help expand my reach?
You do a lot of it, just interacting with people.
Mm-hmm.
Tag anyone you mention. I think you do it very well, but tag them mm-hmm. in your story. Or if you do a story about the MEDC or a story about subsidies, and you're not directly mentioning them, but it's about them, tag them on there.
Mm.
Hashtags don't mean as much anymore on X because the algorithm is so good at finding what you write and what you say as well. Tagging people, but don't tag too many people. as well. And graphs, we do a lot of good charts. Those mm-hmm. are good. Videos, also good as well. Mix it up. X, Facebook, for anyone watching, they don't like links.
Yeah.
So they don't like people just posting a link because X, Facebook, mm-hmm. they want people to stay on the platform.
But part of our thing is not necessarily to drive traffic, but to spend your message. You can do that without a link.
You can. Huh. So I would say just continue to interact with people and in other people too, not just on your post,
yeah,
but people that you follow. I had Elon Musk actually mention me once about 2 years ago in a tweet because I replied to a comment of his, and all he did was heart my comment, and it got me 2,000 new followers just because he hearted my comment. So just interact in the discussion, and that's what I suggest on any platform, really.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you for helping me to help expand the Overton Window.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.